Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "Learning on the job is not enough. Workers want it, companies are paying for it. Tuition assistance programs are changing how hiring gets done in today's competitive employment marketplace." And there's also a second headline inside the Triangle Business Journal where the cover story article begins. That headline, "Class Action. Want to make the best possible hires? You better put some money in the budget to send your prized employees back to school. They're expecting it." And this article is written by Sean Tehan. Just off Interstate 40 in Garner, a massive Amazon distribution hub is rising, a project that will soon employ around 1,500 people. As Amazon employees, they are eligible for an Amazon program that pays 95% of tuition if they want to return to school, even if their program doesn't have a direct tie to an Amazon career. But in a tight and shifting labor market, Amazon isn't the only company trying to lure new employees and keep current ones by helping with their education. Kathy Truitt, Chancellor of Western Governors University of North Carolina, says that driving this change are two forces. First, she says younger workers in the Generation Z and millennial cohorts are used to more entitlements. And also, she says, the student debt crisis being what it is, those already in the workforce cannot afford to take on any more debt. She noted that North Carolina's share of the $1.6 trillion student debt is a whopping $44 billion, according to the Center for Responsible Lending report released in August. Given that, employers across the country are finding that offering programs to send their employees back to school at reduced or no cost and broadcasting those opportunities to prospective workers is a way to attract goal-oriented job applicants in a tight labor market. The programs are drawing enough favor that some experts say company-assisted education may become a standard corporate benefit along the lines of health insurance and 401k offerings. According to a 2019 survey by the Society for Human Resource Management, 56% of employers currently offer some form of undergraduate or graduate tuition assistance for their workers. Additionally, the Center on Education and Workforce at Georgetown University reports that U.S. employers collectively spend about $300 billion annually on informal and formal training for their employees, including partnerships with higher education institutions and tuition assistance programs. In terms of employer-employee tuition assistance, it's every big company, says Anthony Carnaval, the Georgetown Center's director. It's very much a labor market strategy, he says. That's particularly true at a time when student loan debt shapes not only families' financial planning, but also prospective presidents' election platforms. Some 70% of college graduates enter the workforce with $30,000 in student loan debt, says Shatrain Birbal, SHRM's Director of Policy Engagement. Pair that statistic with the fact that about 60% of today's jobs require some post-secondary education, according to the Georgetown Center, and it's a problem on top of a challenge for many. That's part of why Birbal feels employer education benefits could become necessarily ubiquitous as employer health benefits did for workers in the era immediately following World War II. Millennials, defined here as people born between 1981 and 1996, are on track to represent 3/4 of the U.S. workforce by 2025, she says. The current labor market is going to necessitate that type of change, Birbal says. As a result, that's why we're seeing a lot more employers offering education assistance benefits as a tool to recruit and retain talent. Finding the right fit. Truitt of WGU North Carolina says that 76% of her students are working full-time. She notes that about one-third of students who go to four-year schools do not finish, which means they often have debt without the benefit of a degree. So an employer offering a chance to finish school and shoulder some of the cost becomes highly appealing. It is one of the most important employee benefits a company can offer because of the fast pace of change in the workforce, as well as the war for talent, she says. The student debt crisis is driving a lot of this. Not only can they not afford to pay tuition, the only way they can go back is if they attend an online program. In 2014, Starbucks Corporation partnered with Arizona State University to create the Starbucks College Achievement Plan. The program pays full tuition for eligible employees to earn a bachelor's degree via Arizona State's online courses. Employees must work at least 20 hours per week to be considered for the program. The company ultimately expects to help at least 25,000 people graduate by 2025 and projects the cost of that investment to be at least $250 million. Mary Dixon, the program's director, says company statistics show about 20% of Starbucks job applicants cite the complimentary college opportunity as the primary reason they applied with the company. Additionally, Dixon said employees who take advantage of the program stay with Starbucks about 50% longer than the U.S. average for retail employees. "We're finding that it's a great way to attract top talent to the organization," Dixon says. "I think we're seeing it in the attraction of purpose-driven individuals." Fidel Igama, a 27-year-old manager at a Starbucks in Upland, California, started working there as a barista in 2012, shortly after he emigrated to the United States from the Philippines with his family. Igama's family received approval to relocate to America while he was majoring in economics at the University of the Philippines, he said, forcing him to postpone his studies. When Starbucks introduced the Arizona State program, Igama jumped at the opportunity to transfer his credits and finish his studies. He joined the program during the fall semester of 2015 and graduated in May 2018 summa cum laude with a bachelor's degree in technological entrepreneurship and management. "It has been my dream and my parents' dream for me and my other siblings to earn a college degree," Igama says. "Since Starbucks took care of me by providing 100% tuition coverage for my education, I am very happy staying with the company." Starbucks is far from alone. Under AT&T Incorporated's tuition reimbursement program, employees can receive up to $8,000 per year for up to a lifetime cap of $25,000 to pay for certificate and degree programs at any level. The company also partners with multiple universities, the Georgia Institute of Technology and the University of Notre Dame among them, to offer specific technical education tracks that are useful for some employees' work at AT&T. Examples include master's degree programs in computer science, analytics and information technology, and a bachelor's degree offering in cybersecurity, said Jason Oliver, vice president of AT&T University Operations. All told, AT&T pays about $24 million to several thousand employees annually in tuition reimbursement, according to company data. Oliver says part of the drive to offer employees the opportunity to upskill comes from the need to remain relevant and have a state-of-the-art workforce in a time of major change in the communications industry. But like many other companies that offer education benefits, it also positions AT&T as a desirable workplace. "The beautiful thing is that we're ultimately meeting the learner where they are in their evolution of continuous education, where they are in their evolution in their desire to have multiple careers within the walls of AT&T," Oliver says. "It's a great retention tool," he added, in addition to citing the program as a useful recruiting device. Not just big operations. Smaller businesses are getting in on the competition as well. Powtech, P-O-W-T-E-C, Solutions, a Bremerton, Washington-based information technology company whose clients include federal agencies, state and local governments, and tribal entities, offers its approximately 80 employees up to $2,000 per year in tuition reimbursement for studies related to their work, says Cheryl Sands, the company's president. The way Sands sees it, the benefit not only signals to employees that the company is willing to invest in them, but it also shows clients that when they contract with Powtech, they're going to get highly trained individuals working for them. For employees who use the benefit, it's for getting certain certifications or getting recertified in their requirements for their jobs, so it eases the burden that they would have to pay for that themselves, Sand says. I know that employees who have come aboard have been pretty excited about that benefit. Benefits extend to the schools. How this plays out for colleges and universities remains to be seen. Officials at the MBA programs at Duke University and NC State University, for example, say their programs are not seeing a major jump in students coming in because their employers are paying for it, at least not yet. But some schools are. For example, the University of Hartford, a school adjacent to myriad companies in the booming insurance and manufacturing sectors, partners with a number of those businesses, including Cigna and Aetna, says Robert Toller, Associate Director of Graduate Adult Academic Services at the Connecticut School. In addition to providing the school with a consistent pipeline of students and tuition dollars, the school is able to glean from the companies what kinds of skills they are seeking in employees and adjust its offerings in order to match the job market, Toller said. That's something that's very valued for us, Toller says. We want to be able to provide the latest academic concentrations and skills, and you can't really do it in a vacuum. You have to be able to understand what the needs of the businesses are. That's why, Toller says, the Hartford works out price breaks on a case-by-case basis with companies based on factors like how many students are enrolling and which courses they're taking. Arizona State, which in addition to the Starbucks program, partners with Adidas, Uber Technologies Incorporated, and other companies, also offers price breaks, says Sean Hobson, Assistant Vice President and Chief Design Officer for the university's EdPlus program. WGCU North Carolina's Truitt notes that many companies have options to help with school costs. A lot of companies have this as an employee benefit, but only about 10% of employees actually take advantage of it, she says. That's changing. And quickly, as workers saddled with college debt look for ways to finish their degrees or improve their job prospects, and employers look to hang on to their workers as long as they can. And we should also mention that Dane Huffman contributed to this report. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Hendrick plans to tell Wake Tech, start your engines. North Carolina's community college system is a key driver for the state, and a local school is about to get a big lift from one of the biggest names in the automotive industry in the Carolinas. Rick Hendrick, who oversees car dealerships across the Southeast, will pledge $1 million to the Wake Technical Community College. The money will be for naming rights to Wake Tech's North Raleigh Auto Building on September 16, Biz is heard. Back in 2004, Hendrick pledged $1 million to Central Piedmont Community College for an automotive technology center named for the late Joe Hendrick, Rick's father. Automotive technology is changing as mechanics move from traditional methods to processes that involve sophisticated technology, and schools such as Wake Tech are key breeding grounds for the workforce, providing an affordable education that gives the student a path to a well-paying career. Hendrick was born in 1949 in Warrenton and developed a passion for cars. He attended NC State University but quit in 1973 to go work for a Raleigh businessman, Mike Leith, who had a growing empire in the car business. Hendrick soon went out on his own with a franchise in Bennettsville, South Carolina, and became one of the Southeast's industry leaders. Cybersecurity firm sees opportunity to grow in Raleigh. Downtown Raleigh might seem like an unlikely place for a California company to plop down new employees to track West African cyber gangs and Russians trying to hack bank accounts, but that is, in fact, exactly what's happening. Patrick Peterson, the founder and CEO of Agari, spelled A-G-A-R-I, visited Raleigh September 4 to celebrate the expansion of the company's second headquarters at 227 Fayetteville Street. The location currently has 30 employees, compared to 100 in Silicon Valley, and plans to ramp up to 40 by the end of the year. Average salary, Peterson says, about $130,000. Peterson says the company's goal is to protect humanity from evil. It's a big, bad mission, he says. Doing that requires protecting emails and servers from scammers. He notes that there is a great deal of geographic specialization when it comes to who is trying to crack your account. Cyber gangs in West Africa, he says, are very sophisticated and looking for financial gain. Those scams are essentially updates of the old emails you used to get from Nigerian princes looking to give you $1 million. Hackers in Russia, Iran, and North Korea, he says, tend to be involved in espionage, and those from Russia and Eastern Europe are phishing for access to bank accounts. Bad actors are based in China, he says. Bad actors based in China, he says, are looking to steal intellectual property. Agari has attracted $80 million in investment dollars so far and is approaching $50 million in annual recurring revenue. As it grows, it wanted a larger presence on the East Coast and obviously had multiple options. Peterson says that the fact that Raleigh rents are cheaper than, say, Atlanta or Boston wasn't the driving factor. What the company liked was Raleigh's hip downtown, which is attractive to its potential employees. The fact that Raleigh-Durham International Airport has key direct flights, including to Europe, and that there was already a critical mass when it came to the software engineers in the market. Bank gets a boost from solar in Hertford County. By powering up at the Allander Holloman Solar Facility in North Carolina, about 2.5 hours from Raleigh, Cincinnati-based bank Fifth Third claims it's the first publicly traded company in the world to achieve 100% renewable power through a single solar energy project. The solar farm in Hertford County was designed and built by Mooresville-based Sun Energy One and is expected to put about 194,000 megawatt hours of energy, expected to put out about 194,000 megawatt hours of energy per year. CEO Greg Carmichael was in the state to celebrate the achievement. Flounder fishing goes on hiatus in North Carolina. This fall is a great time to be a southern flounder in North Carolina. North Carolinians love flounder. Heck, the menu for the Bridge Tender restaurant in Wilmington even offers a flounder stuffed with crab meat for $28. But the North Carolina Marine Fisheries Commission believes the southern flounder has been overfished, so on September 4, it closed commercial and recreational fishing for flounder in North Carolina waters. The commercial season will reopen September 15 in waters north of the Pamlico Sound and on October 1 in the Pamlico Sound and all other waters. Otherwise, it's time to put the flounder gigs away and starting dreaming of king mackerel. Carrie's Pink House is the star of a new book. Houses have a celebrated place in literature. Tara, Gatsby's Mansion, and Wuthering Heights come to mind. And now a historic home in Cary is the central character in a new book. Sheila Ogle's novel, The Pink House, traces the story of a home that dates to 1830. Ogle first noticed the house on her morning errands and was fascinated by the aura of the place. She and her husband, Carol, purchased the house and were fascinated by its history. The novel traces the history of the house and the growth of the town around it, including the mayors and ministers who appeared in the house, as well as bygone eras that included Prohibition, Model A Fords, and even a mystery of lost shoes. And finally, at U.S. Open, these players have the trip of a lifetime. 24 athletes from the Abilities Tennis Association of North Carolina visited the U.S. Open recently in New York, even getting a chance to appear on center court in Arthur Ashe Stadium. The nonprofit based out of Raleigh provides opportunities to play tennis for people with intellectual disabilities across North Carolina. The three-day trip included the visit to the Open, August 28, where 13-year-old Brogan DeBoer of Raleigh did the coin toss before a match where Novak Djokovic beat Juan Lundero at Ashe Stadium. And now we turn to the On Startups and Legal page written by Lauren Onasorge. Miffed at slogan, Fleet Feet sues Nike to change everything. Nike, through a spokesman, has declined to comment on a lawsuit just filed by Triangle retailer Fleet Feet, alleging trademark infringement and asking for damages. Fleet Feet Incorporated, a retailer based in Carrboro, is suing Oregon-based Nike over its alleged unlawful use of trademarked phrases such as change everything and running changes everything. In the 23-page lawsuit, which hit federal court August 30, Fleet Feet claims it has devoted substantial resources into making those slogans the cornerstones for its brand, efforts it claims Nike disregarded when debuting its own use of the phrase during the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in July. Yet, despite that knowledge, Nike in July 2019 launched a national advertising campaign based on the marks Sports Changes Everything and Running Changes Everything, the suit reads. The first of these Nike marks bears a confusing resemblance to Fleet Feet's marks, and the second is identical to Fleet Feet's mark. Fleet Feet, claims Scott Gravitt, Nike's running specialty sales director for North America, sent a note July 22 stating, "Kudos to you guys for using Running Changes Everything." He then referenced Nike's new Sport Changes Everything campaign and remarked that Fleet Feet was ahead of the curve, the suit claims. In August, Nike's website used the Running Changes Everything phrase according to the complaint. When Fleet Feet complained, they swapped running with sport, the suit adds. And when the company complained further, executives said via telephone that Nike intends to use the Sport Changes Everything campaign through the 2020 Super Bowl, and that Nike is a big company and will, if necessary, spend millions to defend its continuation of the campaign. Fleet Feet is asking a court to stop the alleged infringement and recover damages to compensate Fleet Feet for the injuries and damages it has suffered as a result of Nike's willfully wrongful conduct. Martin Marietta, CEO, ponders making even more acquisitions. With the dust settling on Martin Marietta Materials' $1.6 billion buy of Bluegrass Materials last year, is it time for another big acquisition? We have to see what becomes available, says Ward Nye, CEO of Martin Marietta. We're an aggregates-led company, so aggregates will continue to be our focus. Life is good for Nye, despite a first half of 2019 that was unusually wet in two of the company's biggest markets, Texas and Colorado. Martin Marietta is trading at near a historic high and still raising its dividends. There was some pent-up demand, good bidding activity, Nye says, about recent quarterly results. Martin Marietta and competitor Vulcan Materials own the national aggregates market, providing materials to build roads and buildings. It's an industry peppered with smaller players, some that could be ripe for buyouts. Triangle meat substitute maker eyes opportunities. Quietly, a Garner plant-based protein firm is watching competitors. Giants such as Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat make headlines. And Roddy Hawkins, CEO of Improved Nature, says he's not fazed. All they've done is open up the market for us, show the consumer that there are good products out there, he says. They're good. We're better. Hawkins won't say whether he's had partnership discussions with Impossible Foods, whose Impossible Whopper just hit Burger King, or Beyond Meat, soon to pilot its products in KFC restaurants. I can't talk about it, he says. But Improved Nature, at 22 full-time employees, does have news of its own, such as a recent deal with jerky maker Perky Jerky to create vegetarian beef-like jerky. We've been working on this for about a year and a half, and we felt like we have a superior technology to make this product really, really good, he says. We're not going to launch anything that doesn't taste great. My crew has a background in the meat snack industry. Through the partnership, it has developed two Perky Jerky-branded products, sea salt and pepper, and Tasty Teriyaki. We have a great product in the vegetarian market, and they have a great reputation in the beef jerky market, Hawkins says. We know what we're doing. Insurance costs could rise at the coast. Have a second home at the beach? If so, prepare to pay up, as dwelling insurance rates could be in for a big uptick starting next year, and that's not accounting for Hurricane Dorian. The North Carolina Rate Bureau has filed papers for an average 19.2% increase in dwelling insurance with no leveling in sight. The Rate Bureau represents companies writing property insurance in the state. According to its filing with the North Carolina Department of Insurance, it is requesting an increase of 24.3% in extended wind coverage and an increase of 4.6% in fire coverage. Joanna Belorius, Chief Operating Officer of the North Carolina Rate Bureau, explains a dwelling policy as insuring the structure of a second home, one where the property owner is not a primary resident. It's not a homeowner's policy which covers the contents of a home. It's typically for a second home, rental properties, things of that nature, where it doesn't provide as expansive coverage as the homeowner's policy. It's more for structure than content, she explains. And finally, in a section called He Said It, the quote, I'd like to think that we'll look back in several years and see policy genius as the beginning of a wave, a wave of new employment downtown, new employers downtown. And that's from Timothy Downs, Vice President of Economic Development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, speaking of online insurance broker Policy Genius's decision to locate 350 jobs in downtown Durham. And now we turn to On Healthcare and Education, written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Triangle Company pivots to hemp. Now a full year into its turn away from its tobacco roots to the products of the next generation, such as hemp and cannabis, a Triangle outfit is saying it plans to double, even triple, down on its strategy. Morrisville-based Pyxus International, spelled P-Y-X-U-S, has been undergoing a transformation. Once known as Alliance One International, the company has spent nearly 150 years focusing on a single crop, tobacco. But things have changed for the industry, so last year the company started its new play, changing its name and stock symbol, and diving into new lines of business, including We're Legal, hemp and cannabis, as well as the production of cannabinoidal-based wellness products. CEO Peter Sickle says the potential for the company is huge, with earnings from a full transition predicted to be as much as 2.5 times greater than tobacco revenue. He says the company expects to have a higher proportion of earnings come from next generation products and businesses rather than tobacco by 2023. The changes have included growing pains. Months after changing its name, Pyxus announced 565 layoffs in eastern North Carolina, and the company saw a net loss of $62.1 million for the second quarter of 2019, with $276.6 million in revenue. It reported $164 million in cash on hand. But Sickle feels that Pyxus has massive potential, bringing institutional processes, connections, and supply chains to a still largely unregulated market. Durham clinical firm bolsters C-suite for growth spurt. Following its launch year acquisitions, a Durham clinical site organization is shuffling its executive team to prepare for an impending growth spurt. Former Quintiles executive Paul Evans launched Velocity Clinical Research in February. The company raised at least $19.5 million in a second round of funding. In the months since, the company has expanded beyond its three initial research sites, picking up a site in Grants Pass, Oregon in May. Now the company is confirming those four sites are just the beginning of the rapidly expanding strategy. It has announced the hire of Melissa Holbrook and Ikvia Vice President, who will now serve as Velocity's Vice President of Operations. Holbrook will take over for Jeff Jensen, who will be promoted to Senior Vice President of Corporate Development, a position that Evans says will be used to turn Jensen's full attention to the company's acquisitions activity. The company did not disclose the exact number of acquisition targets it has, but plans to significantly increase in size by the end of the year. Why two Chapel Hill spinouts are now one? A pair of Research Triangle Park biotech startups have come together to advance a cancer technology pipeline. GeneCentric Therapeutics has announced the acquisition of Select Immunogenomics. Both companies are UNC Chapel Hill spinouts focused on advancing oncology and immuno-oncology platforms. GeneCentric CEO Michael Milburn, who took over for founder Dr. Myla Leigh Goldman, says the combination is a natural fit and that both companies saw the obvious synergies. The acquisition will merge GeneCentric's genomics technology with Select's data analysis and biomarkers. The combined platform gives GeneCentric an immunogenetics platform with RNA-based solutions, something Milburn says significantly increases the firm's value and development speed. "It's accelerating our value," he says. "They have a number of pharmaceutical partnerships that we're now working on jointly, so it augments our business as well." Milburn says those relationships are important as the company works to develop its own drug pipeline. NC State gets major gift from Danish drug maker. The Novo Nordisk Foundation is investing big into biomanufacturing research, and at the heart of their new $27 million investment is NC State University. The foundation, the philanthropic arm of the Danish drug maker, already helping transform eastern swaths of the state, has aimed its $27 million project at advancing the next generation of biopharmaceutical manufacturing. It's called Accelerated Innovation in Manufacturing Biologics, AIM Bio. The project has a specific aim toward enhancing research around biotherapeutic production involving antibodies, enzymes, insulin, and ingredients for therapeutics and gene therapy. The funding for the project is split between NC State, which will receive $18 million of the sum, and the Technical University of Denmark in Copenhagen, which will receive the remainder. Funding will be distributed over a five-year project timeline. Ruben Carbonell, an NCSU professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering and principal investigator on the grant, says the funding will lead to a very significant increase in NC State's research and development capabilities. Carbonell says the funding will lead to a 40% increase in the number of courses in its professional development program, 8 new research projects involving various areas of biomanufacturing, new equipment for their programs, and 6 to 7 new faculty, as well as increased slots for doctoral and postdoctoral students. It's a very, very big impact of the 5-year period, he says. But more importantly, those courses we develop will be taught year after year, so for the long term, it will affect a lot of future students. In June, the foundation tapped NC State researchers to lead a $30 million 6-year project that will examine microbes and their impact on plant health and productivity. The two projects combined mean the Danish company is committing more than $25 million to the university just this year. Klaus Felby, the foundation's head of biotechnology, says the continued partnership with the university is in part due to its proximity to the company's massive Johnston County facility, which is undergoing a nearly $2 billion expansion. And finally, in a section called Compared, numbers show triangle among best for life sciences. The triangle owes its high status as a life sciences cluster to talented workers and plenty of space, lab space that is. The Raleigh-Durham metropolitan area falls behind only Boston, San Francisco, and San Diego, according to an annual report from commercial real estate company JLL. But despite its high ranking, the Triangle has a long way to go before competing for the top slots. Here's a look at the Triangle by the numbers, according to JLL research. 64.3, the Triangle score, considerably higher than Washington, D.C. at 52.5, but far from Boston's 89.2 or San Diego's 71.6. 120,000, number of students in the Triangle's higher education systems. 5,000, science, technology, engineering, and math graduates each year in the Triangle. 47% of area adults who have a bachelor's degree or higher. 36,500, number of people employed by the Triangle's 984 life sciences companies. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Raleigh Tower now faces financing risk. The developer of a potential 40-story tower in downtown Raleigh says the inclusion of affordable housing may put the project at risk. On September 3, Raleigh City Council granted a rezoning request to allow for up to 40 stories of development at the site of the Peace and West Project downtown, a partnership between Williams Realty and Kane Realty Corporation. Following discussions with the city, the companies agreed to include affordable housing in the development, but a Kane official says doing so could throw a wrench in the project's financing. It introduces a whole new level of financing risk that we're honestly not sure how we'll navigate, says Bonner Gaylord, managing director of operations at Kane and former member of the city council. It could put the project in jeopardy, but we're willing to take that risk to make the council and the community comfortable with the project. Before the rezoning, the property restricted development up to 12 stories. The rezoning encompasses less than 3 acres southwest of the Peace Street Capitol Boulevard intersection. The companies requested the rezoning in January to allow for a tower that would make up the project's third phase. Initially, discussions with the city led Kane to offer $1 million for affordable housing initiatives in lieu of adding affordable housing to the development. But it wasn't enough to win over enough members of city council. Kane agreed to include 3 potential options for affordable housing. 15% of the units as affordable for households making 80% of the area's median income for no less than 15 years, 10% of the units as affordable for households making 60% of the median income for no less than 10 years, and 5% of the units as affordable for households making 50% of the median income for no less than 5 years. How Raleigh compares on rental increases. Skyrocketing rents in Raleigh this year have made the City of Oaks the fifth fastest growing apartment market among the nation's large cities. Rents in Raleigh rose 3.4% over the past year, compared to the national trend of just 1.6%. This puts the city ahead of Austin, Texas, and just behind Phoenix. Median two-bedroom rent in Raleigh is now $1,177, compared to the national average of $1,191. Name revealed for site of Wake Forest Wegmans. The site for a Wegmans in Wake Forest has a name, and it may soon have a little more land. Dubbed Grove 98, plans are coming into focus for the nearly 70-acre mixed-use development as crews prepare to begin site work on the tract situated near the intersection of NC 98 and US 1. Among the top priorities for planners is avoiding the look of a shopping plaza dominated by big-box stores. Instead, the plan is to create a more livable and walkable community. We'll blend some neighborhood retail shops on each corner with the Wegmans on the opposite corner and really wrap everything with residential to create a neighborhood feel as much as possible, says Jacob Anderson, owner of the Alliance Group NC, which has led the process of acquiring land for the project and working with the town for site approval. Once the town gives the go-ahead, crews will begin site work within 1 to 2 weeks. Hotel apartments near RTP among sites sold in August. Three notable commercial properties in the Triangle sold in August for a combined total of more than $100 million. Here's a roundup of the sales. The Flats at 5512 Apartments. Oak Realty Group of Illinois sold the Durham apartments for over $40 million after owning and operating the property since 2014. Atlantic Pacific paid $42.35 million for the property. Phillips Research Park Apartments. Phillips Development and Realty, a Tampa, Florida company with strong ties to the Triangle, sold the apartments for nearly $47 million to Brookline Investment Group of Southern California. Phillips announced in 2010 that it planned to spend $50 million to develop the property. Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill. Noble Investment Group sold the Courtyard by Marriott in Chapel Hill to a local developer for over $30 million. The property features 169 rooms on 8.2 acres at 100 Marriott Way. Atma Hotel Group paid a little over $31 million for the property, adding to its growing hotel holdings in the region. And finally, Chicago firm expands presence in Triangle. A Chicago-based real estate firm is expanding its Triangle portfolio with the purchase of an apartment and retail property in Raleigh. Waterton has acquired Manor Six Forks in Raleigh, making it the fifth North Carolina property the company has purchased in the last 2 years. The purchase follows the company's 2018 multi-property portfolio purchase in Raleigh, Cary, and Charlotte. Manor Six Forks is five stories with 298 multifamily units and 12,000 square feet of retail space situated at 900 East Six Forks Road. Waterton Senior VP of Acquisitions, Matt Massenter, says, "I pursued it primarily because of its strategic location between North Hills and downtown Raleigh. Retailers in the building include a craft beer and wine outlet, nail salon, fitness and martial arts studio, and pet care center. Waterton declined to specify the purchase prices, and public records do not yet reflect the purchase. County records value the property at $45.29 million. The seller, Sherman Residential of Illinois, bought the property in 2014 for $48.45 million. And now we turn to the On Business page, written by David Pertell. His task at Chamber is to keep it rolling. The new head of North Carolina's largest business advocacy group says he wants to protect recent accomplishments and build on the state's current economic success. North Carolina Chamber President and CEO Gary Salamito says improving the standard of health care in the state and developing a workforce to meet the immediate and future needs of businesses are the chamber's top priorities as he begins his new role. He was named CEO in August and has been with the organization since 2011. Salamito had been serving as acting president following the retirement of former President Lou Ebert late last year. He says the chamber has a laser focus on education and talent supply as it works to build collaborations between businesses and state and local governments to ensure companies have a reliable pipeline for future labor needs. We have the people and we have the jobs, Salamito says, but there is a skills gap that needs to be filled. The best way to bridge the gap is to go community by community to deliver the type of workforce employers need, he says. 5 years ago, the chamber launched its 2030 Vision Plan, a roadmap for where the organization thinks North Carolina needs to be to maximize the anticipated population and economic growth. The first 5 years of the plan focused on advocating for ways to make the state more competitive, both nationally and globally, Salamito says. And it was successful, he says, as lawmakers lowered corporate and personal income taxes and the state worked to shore up its unemployment system. This year, North Carolina's corporate tax rate dropped to 2.5%, the lowest in the nation among the 44 states with a corporate income tax. Now, Salamito says, the goal is protect what we've accomplished, while making gains in other areas, including healthcare, an area where the state ranks in the bottom half of the country. Salamito, a native of New York who previously led the chamber's lobbying and political efforts, says business owners tell him they're doing everything they're told to do, but the costs of healthcare keep rising. He says the chamber supports a shift to value-based healthcare that focuses on quality of care and patient outcomes. Got to make this a better value proposition for us, he says. On the economic development front, the chamber continues to support the efforts of the state's Department of Commerce and the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, he says. And also, North Carolina lawsuit challenges e-cigarette companies. North Carolina is suing e-cigarette companies, accusing them of marketing their products to children and helping to fuel an epidemic of vaping among young people. The lawsuits target 8 businesses and are brought under the state's Unfair and Deceptive Trade Practices Act. These companies are aggressively targeting children and do not require appropriate age verification when selling these dangerous and addictive products, the state attorney general's office states. The lawsuits asked the courts to shut down sales from the companies in North Carolina. The companies named are Beard Vape, Direct E-Liquid, Electric Lotus, Electric Tobacconist, Eon Smoke, Juice Man, Tinted Brew, and Vape Co. In a statement, Attorney General Josh Stein says, at the same time as our kids are headed off to school, we are hearing news stories about the health risks associated with e-cigarettes on a daily basis. Our complaints allege that these 8 e-cig companies are helping to fuel an epidemic of vaping among high school and middle school students, he says. The use of e-cigarettes, known as vaping, has seen a dramatic rise in recent years, especially among young people, as researchers and health experts scramble to determine the long-term health effects of vaping. And now we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we have a Q&A column written by Dane Huffman. The headline, Raleigh's International Festival Shifts Dates, Venue. Raleigh was a much smaller town with a smaller international community when the International Festival debuted at the old Civic Center in 1986. Interest quickly grew, with thousands of people coming each year to sample the food, music, and dance of the many nationalities represented in the Triangle. It was one of the largest festivals in the market, with crowds that could swell to 30,000. The festival is put on by International Focus, a nonprofit with 4 employees plus interns and a budget of about $500,000. International Focus has other programs designed to connect the international community across the Triangle, but the best known is the festival. This year, the festival is switching dates and locations. Claudia Lyons Bastion, the executive director of International Focus, says it will be March 6th through 8th at the NC State Fairgrounds. Here, Lyons Bastion explains what's ahead for one of Raleigh's signature events. What's the goal of the festival? The festival's central purpose has always been that of a connector between the Triangle's diverse cultural groups and the greater community. Over 80% of the event's participation is made up of immigrants who chose the Triangle as their home and built a community here. What ages attend? We get a lot of young families with kids who participate in the passport scavenger hunt to become citizens of the world, and older folks who enjoy the dance and cultural exhibits. Then there's the music stage and shopping bazaars, and of course the food appeals to pretty much everyone. How many countries will be represented? We expect to host over 60 different cultures in 2020. Some have been with us from the beginning in 1986, such as the Dutch and the Greeks, and some are more recent arrivals to the Triangle and the festival, such as the Eritreans and the Laotians. Why did you leave the Raleigh Convention Center? The International Festival debuted at the old Civic Center and moved to the current Raleigh Convention Center when it was completed in 2008. The event has always been held in late October, but with the growth of festivals and events in Raleigh over the last decade, that date put us at the very end of the festival season and sometimes in competition with the state fair. With new policies at the convention center, caused our rent to be more than doubled to over $120,000, we decided the time was right to move. Now we will be one of the first festivals of the season in March at the NC State Fairgrounds. How many people do you expect? About 27,000 people in 2020. Revenues to International Focus will be around $200,000. We try to keep ticket prices low so everyone is able to attend. And of course, much of the festival revenue goes directly to the international communities as mentioned above. What will be new this year? The festival will have a visual arts section for the first time, featuring original paintings, photography, mixed media, and collage art on the topic of multiculturalism, diversity, and inclusion. We will also be inviting some of the excellent new ethnic food trucks in the area to join us in addition to our global sidewalk cafes. We're working on making participation more active for attendees through technologies. Kids activities are another area we are expanding in 2020. Does the City of Raleigh help with the event? We are grateful to be an area partner with the city through the Raleigh Arts Commission grant program, and we love having the Human Relations Commission and the Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Resources participate in the festival each year, among other departments. Is the national debate over immigration having any impact? It definitely does. The International Focus's central mission is to connect people across cultures and build global understanding through face-to-face engagement. Sadly, a lot of recent public discourse has resulted in raising distrust of foreigners and dehumanizing immigrants to a level not seen since the 1940s. These developments make our work of providing opportunity to come together to learn about each other that much more important. We see time and again that when people meet each other face to face, they recognize themselves in each other. Fear diminishes and respect grows. The national debate has spurred us to think creatively about new ways to connect and build community around diversity and inclusivity. And now we turn to the nonprofit notes. Nonprofits seek dollars in Shark Tank event. A local organization that looks to coach and train nonprofit leaders is having a Shark Tank style event to help those groups get visibility and more funding. Jim Dotson, executive director of Mission Triangle, got the idea from his children who love the ABC show, and they rolled it out in 2017. The effort last year raised $42,000. This year, it's October 17 at 6 p.m. at Providence Baptist Church in Raleigh, and John Clark of ABC 11 will MC. The three nonprofits will be Justice Matters, provide support for children who have been abandoned or neglected, Neighbor Health, a medical services provider with a focus on those who lack insurance, and Do for Him, spelled D-E-W, a program based in Wendell that serves women who are currently incarcerated or recently out of prison. The event will include three local business leaders who will ask questions. Those in the audience can decide whether to give. Dotson wants to teach nonprofits the same principles that business leaders need so they are healthy and sustainable. Their hearts are in the right place and they have the drive and the passion to help, but in today's world, givers, especially corporations and business leaders, are looking under the hoods of these nonprofits and they're expecting to see a strategic plan and that the nonprofit work doesn't rest on the executive director alone. Breweries circle around Children's Flight of Hope. A local fundraising event in its fifth year is moving locations because of the sheer volume of support. On September 14, corporate teams will pair with 24 local breweries to host Triangle Hops for Hope, an annual fundraiser for the Children's Flight of Hope organization. It provides air travel to children with medical conditions to treatment. Last year, the event was held at Raleigh Beer Garden with a sold-out crowd of 1,000 that raised more than $90,000. This year, the event is at North Hills Midtown Park. And finally, Blue Cross NC to help battle addiction crisis. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina will provide $330,000 to Shatterproof to implement its Atlas data platform in the state next year. Patients and families have not had a reliable way to evaluate addiction treatment facilities, so when a person needs care, it is difficult to identify high-quality and effective programs, says Dr. Kate Hobbs-Knutson, Blue Cross NC's Chief of Behavioral Health. Shatterproof is working to fill that void by developing an innovative service to make addiction treatment quality information more transparent and useful, she says. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page, where we read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Raleigh makes the right call to address affordability. My readers who follow my weekly banter about business issues may find it surprising what I am about to say. On September 3, Raleigh City Council granted a rezoning request to John Cain's Cane Realty and Williams Realty that would allow the developers to build a 40-story tower at the corner of West and P Streets. The property was previously zoned for 12 stories. In return, however, City Council members wanted the developers to include affordability options. Essentially, the developers must make some of these units available for individuals who earn below the area's median income. Raleigh got this deal right. However, no sooner did Raleigh approve, a representative from Kane, Bonner Gaylord, a former city council member himself, told us the deal introduces a new level of financing risk that could put the project in jeopardy. We disagree. Developers Kane and Williams had a choice. They could have built a 12-story building without this rezoning hearing and additional stipulations. If they wanted, they could have charged people $1 million for their condos and went about their business. But economics say if you are able to go vertical, your capital costs are defrayed over a larger surface. Hence, the per-unit cost gets reduced even if the total cost of the project could rise substantially because of the increased size. Raleigh asking private developers to address affordability should not be seen as a government intrusion. It should be the norm. If we are ready to face world-class challenges, we must face the fact that everyone is not equally fortunate. One can argue until the cows come home to explain why that is so, but that argument does not stop gentrification. That argument rings hollow if the successful among us refuse to pick up the mantle to take the lead in countering inequality and affordability issues faced by a growing city. Kane knew before his rezoning hearing that the council would bring up affordability options during the hearing. He volunteered $1 million to the city to address affordability issues. City council members did not take the deal. They offered a bolder choice. But it is only bold if our leaders address the issue of affordability with every developer, not just Kane. The next step would be for the city planners and council members to internally come up with some standards, but only after they bring developers to the same table. We need to attack this problem on several fronts. There's talk about Raleigh issuing some $80 million in affordable housing bonds that could be used to spur private public development ventures through tax credits and other offsetting fiscal issues. Also, we need to develop a plan for introducing micro units in business districts so our creative class, such as artists, musicians, brewers, and designers, could have affordable options. We need all the stakeholders to come to the table with one sentiment. Downtown living should not just be for the privileged few. We may just have taken the first step trying to write that course. And with our time remaining, we'll read as much as we can of the other Viewpoint column, written by Patrick McHugh and Sui Khachaturian, Budget and Tax Center's Senior Policy Analyst at the North Carolina Justice Center, co-authored the report. The headline, Medicaid Expansion Right for Rural Hospitals. Many North Carolina rural hospitals have closed or are at risk of closing for financial reasons. Medicaid expansion is likely the single fastest way to put these facilities on more solid economic ground. Medicaid expansion could provide a much-needed tonic for the fiscal ailments that many rural hospitals face in North Carolina. Medicaid expansion could, in one stroke, profoundly improve the physical and economic health of rural communities. Expansion would ensure life-saving care for hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians, support rural hospitals currently facing financial ruin, and stave off the economic damage that follows hospital closures. The report, which includes a list of the projected financial impacts of full Medicaid expansion on each hospital in North Carolina, discusses how financial pressures, including uncompensated care costs, have already pushed several North Carolina hospitals into insolvency. Many of North Carolina's rural hospitals have either closed in recent years or at risk of closing by dramatically reducing uncompensated care costs for many rural hospitals in North Carolina. Medicaid expansion is likely the single fastest way to put these facilities on more solid economic ground while addressing a gaping hole in our healthcare system. Other highlights from the report: Medicaid expansion has proven effective in stabilizing rural hospitals. The overwhelming majority of U.S. rural hospitals forced to close their doors were in states that have not expanded eligibility. North Carolina has had 5 hospitals close over that same time. Fiscal research data shows net improvement in all North Carolina hospitals' finances. The Fiscal Research Division of the North Carolina General Assembly projects that Medicaid expansion could provide affordable coverage for up to 650,000 people within a few years and generate more than $1.8 billion annually in hospital reimbursements. Even while covering the state's share of the costs, hospitals would see a nearly $400 million net improvement in their financial standing. Of that, rural hospitals would receive approximately $665 million in new Medicaid payments each year, which would improve rural hospitals' net fiscal strength by nearly $140 million. Work reporting requirements and premiums would undermine the benefits of expansion. These requirements in other states have pushed down enrollment, reducing the new Medicaid reimbursements the hospitals would receive and forcing them to cover more of the costs of providing care to uninsured patients. With North Carolina's uninsured rate among the highest in the nation, rural hospitals in our state struggle more than their peers in many other states to cover the cost of uncompensated care. And finally, hospitals are key to rural economies. Hospitals create jobs, attract and retain companies that bring local jobs, and keep the local workforce healthier and more productive. Also, research shows that each hospital job lost in a rural community destroys another local job, effectively doubling the economic cost of rural hospital closures. Full Medicaid expansion would strengthen the hospital's finances, and saving rural hospitals is essential to the long-term economic vitality of many communities in North Carolina. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.